Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Every Wednesday at 2, the Killer Bees with In Case We Missed It.
What's in the news today?
With so many stories.
Dozens of stories.
We're bound to miss a few.
I'm sorry, did I miss something?
It's In Case We Missed It with the Killer Bees.
And here's the stuff you missed.
Joe Burrow, who a lot of LSU fans have jumped on, whoever their favorite professional football team is, bandwagon to join the Bengals bandwagon. One, because Burrow is their quarterback. Two, because the Bengals are good, and that's what T-shirt fans do, is they jump on people's bandwagons. Anyways, Joe Burrow had his appendix removed yesterday. I'm pretty sure it was an emergency appendix removal after having
He's going to have it done in the next 48 hours. It's not done yet.
So I'm imagining he had appendicitis, though.
Probably some kind of irritation or something, right?
Yeah. So Brendan told us this yesterday, that should you be a professional athlete, just have this done in the offseason. That way you don't have to worry about something flaring up. Could you imagine on the eve of the Super Bowl that Joe Burrow has his appendix burst, he needs emergency appendix
removal?
As much
as these guys go through extensive medicals, I don't think that there's anything that's going to tell you that your appendix is leaning towards needing to get attention paid to it during the season. So let's not throw caution to the wind here. Let's just pop that bad boy out and let you recover and get on with it. It's like as dumb as saying you should have your hammock bone removed in the off season. I just think that unless it's bothering you and it's an actual issue, that I don't think you should have to deal with it. In most cases, guys don't need appendicitis in the middle of the season.
It's being a professional, in my opinion. If you just like the same way that you would work out, the same way that you would lift weights, the same way that you would sprint, the same way that you would do 7-on-7 drills if you're Deshaun Watson and are not playing football, to keep yourself in shape, to do whatever is right for the team, to put yourself in the best chance to win, you should have the foresight to, you know, I don't want my appendix to burst the night before a Super Bowl. I don't want my hamate bone to crack in October. So just go ahead and do the precautionary thing in the offseason because you're a pro. You're getting paid
to do these
things.
So you're not feeling anything. You're not feeling anything in the hamate. You're not feeling anything in the appendix. No, you don't have bubble guts. You don't have strange diarrhea. You don't have whatever the symptoms are for an appendicitis.
You don't need them.
You just think, you know what? I was thinking, guys, let me do you a solid that does me a solid. We just started the offseason. Yeah, it'll get me out of off-season workouts, too. But appendix out and why don't you pop my hammock bone while you're there?
You do it right at the end of the season. That way you don't miss any time. No, you don't do it before
training
camp.
Well, you don't know how long it's going to take to recover from both.
Yeah, you do.
Hammock.
There's a very specific amount of time it takes to recover
from the hammock's a little longer than the appendix.
Six to eight weeks.
A decent amount of time.
You do it the next day after the final out is made on the season. You're back for spring training, no problem. You have your appendix removed the day after your last NFL game. You're back the next season. You don't have to ever worry about it again.
You're missing off-season stuff.
Have your tonsils removed when you have a sore throat.
You're missing off-season stuff.
You're not missing off-season stuff. You can schedule it on the calendar very easily.
OTAs are still in that 6 to 8 week window.
Okay, well, then have it after OTAs. You can do it
over the span. Right after OTAs, that 6 to 8 window affects the start of training camp.
Well, you're talking about like rookie mini camp. Like, if you have it the day after the season, you can fit it into the calendar.
Let's just get down to the crux of what the real issue is. It's absolutely asinine to think that, you know what?
No way.
I'm sitting there taking inventory of my body and what could possibly go wrong. Nothing wrong with these three things or two things, but you know what? Let's just get them out of here in case there's a problem.
My guess would be a doctor would tell you, let's not do surgery just to do surgery.
I'm going to miss a couple of weeks here in the next couple of weeks, and during those 2 weeks, I'm going to have my appendix removed. That way, I don't have appendicitis, and I let you guys know, like, Monday at 9 o'clock. I don't need my hammock to do this job, so no.
With that baseball bat in your hand all the time,
I could get through 3 hours of the show without this baseball bat in my hand.
We'll shave it down to an axe handle while you're out.
I could also just put it in one hand as opposed to two. But because I care so much about my profession and this show, I'm going to have my appendix removed.
What about your tonsils?
While the 2 weeks that are gone. I already had those removed.
Okay.
I think. I'm not exactly sure.
See, because if they're still there, they got to go.
I think I still have them, actually.
If they're still there, they got to go.
I think I do actually still have them. I'm kidding, by the way. I'm kidding. Julio Jones is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. This might mean two more wins for the Tampa. Okay, I'm kidding about that, too. But Julio Jones headed to Tampa Bay.
What do they have to lose, right? I mean, if there's a team that's loaded enough at the receiver position already that if he comes in and he stays healthy and he does some things, huge win for them. If he doesn't, you still got Mike Evans and all the other guys that they have to where you'll be just fine. The thing that continues to chap my ass is if you look at two teams that are supposedly chasing the ultimate goal of the Super Bowl this year, Tampa's willing to take flyers on every veteran that was once good to try and see if they can be good again. Green Bay sitting there riding on USFL and XFL receivers to try and see if they can win a Super Bowl, and that's ridiculous to me.
Those USFL, XFL receivers are probably better than washed-up Julio Jones, who last year caught 31 passes for 434
yards.
He'll
make the roster on opening day, I guarantee it. I don't know that the guys that the Packers brought in are going to.
I don't think Julio Jones is good anymore, but I also don't hate the move for Tampa Bay. Like, he's a backup probably to Mike Evans. You're probably going to see him like 10 snaps. He's insurance more than anything else. If you have that roster spot,
bring him in.
Well, what's
his name? He won't be back.
Godwin?
Yeah, Godwin.
Yeah,
he's a different player, though, than Godwin.
He's more of an outside guy.
Yeah, Godwin's more of a slot and speed guy, but I get it.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't hate the move. I just don't expect to see a whole lot for Julio Jones. I don't think he necessarily moves the needle or gains them more, you know, an extra win. But why not? Why not bring in a Julio Jones to see what's going on? All right, egregious Madden ratings. Because you told us we should be talking about Madden ratings.
Who's you? I didn't.
The city. Oh. The Hive.
BK
the listeners.
Did.
What's that?
BK did. Kellner was all over the Madden ratings mean something.
Everybody is. Everybody. Oh, I mean, I saw wire-to-wire programming about Madden ratings.
Yeah, I was not in on that.
Matt Ryan at 81 on Madden ratings.
Okay.
You think that's too low for a former MVP?
I think it's too I don't care.
I enjoy your participation
conversation. You know I'm not a Madden guy anyway. Brennan would be the guy to ask, but I don't. You know what? I don't think it I don't think I give a rat's ass what his Madden rating is. I want if he plays well for the Colts. I don't think they do either.
I don't even know which way they're saying this is egregious because it sounds pretty reasonable.
Pretty spot on. Right on the money, doesn't it? Christian McCaffrey is a 96. Not too high for always
humble
Christian McCaffrey.
Do you get an 81, but it's silver because you're in the 80s instead of the guys that got the gold 99 rating?
Oh, I didn't even see that was a thing.
I'm leaning, it's a big presentation.
No. Devontae Adams got a gold chain with a 99 with a circle. I don't know if it's diamond encrusted or whatever, if you're a 99. So if you're an 81, you get a hot dog and a silver one.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean an 81, whatever.
Yeah, I don't think he's getting an 81.
No.
Christian McCaffrey, 96, whatever. He's probably 96 whenever he plays well, but I hope his injury is like at a 1 because he's always injured.
I was going to say he's a 96 for 4 weeks of the year.
That's true. Deebo Samuel is an 89.
He's probably pissed about that.
I think he should be in the 90s, that Deebo Samuel. I wonder what he is as a receiver, and I wonder what he is as a running
Tier
back.
Tier 2.
If he's better at running back than a receiver, he'd probably say, take my name off the game. Trey Hendrickson, who's one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, 85. I think he got rated poorly there.
Isn't there an appeal process? I believe there is.
I have no idea.
Players can appeal.
And really?
Yes. This is how far this has gone.
Trayvon Diggs is an 84.
Next.
Do you think that's too low for a guy who gets so many interceptions?
I'm devastated by it. I cannot believe it.
Have some fun.
I'm having fun. I'm just not a Madden guy, and I think these ratings are overblown.
When was the last time you played a video game?
Can't even tell you. Maybe in the arcade style, I've played them, but yeah, maybe probably not.
Arlington Kuykul has signed a minor league deal with the Arlington Rangers. What'd you think of the former Astro pitcher heading to Arlington? Actually, he's not even heading to Arlington. He's headed to the minor league system of the Arlington Rangers.
I mean, they're going nowhere. It means nothing. He gets another check and another chance to try and figure out whatever the hell he's lost and where it's gone and can he get it back. But to me, it means absolutely nothing except for the fact that he's still employed. I mean, if you can't do it with the Diamondbacks, you're going to do it with the Rangers. He's fallen off mightily, and I wish him the best, but I think the Astros would have had a better marketing plan for paying him because you could have made that money probably up and then some by just having him pitch in Sugar Land for the memories of it all. But other than that, I don't expect anything out of Dallas Keuchel, but good for him for getting another gig.
Yeah, he's been terrible as a big leaguer. He's washed. I don't think he might get another chance with the Rangers, September call-up, whatever. They have injuries. He could potentially be up with the Rangers again, but he's never going to pitch a significant baseball game.
This isn't a guy that's got a massive arm that if he figures out his breaking pitches, he could still be effective. This is a guy that never had a massive arm. That you're expecting him to be more effective with his breaking pitches? I don't think so.
When did he left in free agency after the World Series, which would have been 2017? So I think he was a free agent after the
18?
World Series. No, he was a free agent after 18. You're right. So he was on the 18 roster.
Mm-hmm.
So he was. Remember, he was winning the big deal.
He turned down the Astros.
What was
who
the
ended up giving
it,
more
though?
Money than what he made.
But I think the length was 5 years. I think they were willing to go up to 5 years on Dallas Keuchel. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. Dallas Keuchel. If the Astros offered him
a
5 year deal,
he turned
Dallas
it down.
Keuchel told them no. So everybody that's like hashtag pay the man. We love Correa. We love Springer. Just use this as an example, because right now, if Dallas Keuchel would have signed the offer that Jeff Luhnow offered to him, this would have been his fourth year. He'd be under contract this year and next year.
At what, 17? 18?
Yeah, I think it was 17. I can't remember the exact number.
Here's the other thing, too. He also would have made more money signing the Astros deal than the deals that Boris had to put together just to try and salvage money for him.
Yeah. Yeah. He lost.
Screwed himself.
He did. He lost on that deal. He'd still be getting paid in the teens this year and in the teens next year, too. Thank goodness the Astros had Dallas Keuchel turn that down. Davante Adams really thinks that David Carr's brother is a Hall of Famer. He said that it's difficult. It's a challenge to go from one Hall of Fame quarterback to another Hall of Fame quarterback.
He has tried to walk this back and then not wanting to walk it back. He tried to explain it. There is no explanation.
Yeah, he really didn't try to walk it back, though.
He started to. He started saying, what I meant to say was, he doesn't have an MVP yet, and he doesn't have a Super Bowl,
yeah.
but he could get there, and he will get to the point of being a Hall of Famer. But then he said, I mean, what's the difference? He said, and then he said it again.
He said, but I do think Derek's career is Hall of Fame worthy.
It's just, it's stupidity is what it is.
I think it's him gassing up his teammate. Like, what's he going to say? Like, yeah, I think he sucks.
He beat Tyreek Hill, too.
I don't think
Tyreek
he's as good as Aaron Rodgers.
Look at Tua. You know, he was bragging all over Tua for about a week, and then walked it back with Mahomes a little bit.
Like, think about it, too, from, like, a Devontae perspective. Okay, you say that, which no one really believes or agrees with. We all roast Davante Adams for a day. What does Davante Adams care? Like, he's gassing up. He's Kobe-ing up his quarterback, trying to give, you know, a little love towards his former college teammate.
That was the first day. Then the second day, when he walked it back and didn't, then we're talking about him again.
Yeah, but so what? Right? Huh? Like, I'm saying, like, what
Look,
does he
you
have to
you're
lose?
Right. The biggest thing is, just like I said, Tyreek Hill was gassing up Tua. You have to gas up your guy because he's your guy. I mean, you're an idiot.
Exactly.
I mean, the opposite would be what Robbie Williams did with the Panthers about Baker Mayfield. Do you want what? No! Then you get Baker Mayfield. Now, how are you going to rectify that situation?
You're going to love this one. Your favorite player, Aaron Rodgers, was asked if it was good having Alan Lazard back after missing all offseason. And Aaron Rodgers said, yeah. I mean, it's always tough going from Hall of Famer to Hall of Famer.
That's fantastic. That's actually a good one.
Oh, man. That's well played by Aaron Rodgers, who went he reported to camp as Nicolas Cage.
That was so stupid.
You thought, why? You're anti-fun. You're anti-fun.
It's not that I'm
was
anti-fun.
Terrific.
I'm against Mr. Attention Whore constantly bringing more attention to himself. Because guess what they asked him about after the first day of camp today?
About Con Air. Alan Lazard?
Con Air and the look and the whole gimmick that he did.
Oh, it was fun. It was fun. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Yesterday we had our top five targets for the Houston Astros. Today the bottom five and Blankers are going to hate it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I want to tell you about Pro Dunk Hoops. It's the best basketball goal on the market. It is the absolute best. Tempered glass backboard gives you a true, authentic feel. Adjustable goals for every part of the game. Lower it to dunk, raise it up to regulation if you want to work on your shot, if you want to work on your game, or you have a kid working on their game, you want to make sure that you get them a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. That way they can work on their game to the very best. They also have the competition-grade breakaway rim, perfect for dunking, hanging, keeping you safe. An extended overhang under the basket keeps a clear path under the rim. You don't have to worry about rolling your ankle in a basketball stanchion, anything like that. It keeps you and your loved ones safe. Also, durability is a strength of Pro Dunk Hoops. Stainless steel fasteners, thicker steel, exclusive rust armor, which makes them sturdy and strong. You won't find anything like it at the big box stores, and you won't find anything like this at the big box stores either. They'll install the goal. Yeah, Pro Dunk Hoops will professionally install your goal, perfect height, perfectly straight. You can't screw it up because they're doing it. You don't install, let the pros at Pro Dunk Hoops do all of the work for you. Pro Dunk Hoops goals come in a variety of sizes and options. That'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Give them a call, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Blankers is going to hate this list. My bottom five targets for the Astros at the trade deadline, these are guys I do not want. Yesterday went over a few of the names that I do like. A couple of lefties like Chafin, Puck, Okert, Manaply. I'd be watching the White Sox, too, with Jose Abreu. If they fall out of the race and they're sellers, I would love Jose Abreu.
He knows some of the dudes on the Astros pretty well, too.
Yeah, the Cuban guy. Yep. I would love Abreu in Houston. I don't think that the White Sox are going to be sellers, but if they are, I'd be kicking the tires on Jose Abreu. Josh Bell, Trey Mancini, Wilson Contreras, a couple of the bullpen arms I like, Barlow, Bednar, whatever. Here are some names that I do not want the Houston Astros to trade for. I don't think you're going to like this list, but we'll see. The first one's Juan Soto. The biggest name on the trade market. He is the best player on the trade market, admittedly. The return it's going to take that we've seen reported, I think it was Heyman that reported it, two major league players, so we're talking like Luis Garcia, Christian Javier, your top four prospects, Hunter Brown, Corey Lee, Pedro Leon, probably Yiner Diaz too. And then also, there's been some reporting on this that this might not be true. They would want you to take the contract to Patrick Corbin on top of that. That is a deal breaker, no. There's been some reports today at the contrary that says they wouldn't necessarily have to make you take Corbin back. So that would make it a little bit easier to swallow, but that completely rocks what you are and what you are as an organization.
I'm okay with that one. I mean, I know where you're going, but I'm fine with them not going in on Juan Soto. When you have Jordan Alvarez, I don't think you – and you have still have Kyle Tucker and you're trying to get him signed long-term, you have enough options that you don't need to give up the farm literally to get – and some of the roster to get another guy that you're going to have to grossly overpay. I'm fine with it.
It's sexy, obviously. I think the people that want to, you know, hear some buzz names like to throw that out there, just not in favor of it. All right, a couple of arms here. One of them has a local tie to Brendan. Michael Fulmer, who's actually had a pretty good year, 231 ERA.
Tigers guy, 20, right?
Yep, 29-year-old righty, converted starter, has been really good against righties. But I think it's been a little bit fluky, not a super high strikeout per nine, which you want as a reliever. And he walks more dudes than Brian Abreu. Which is alarming, right? Like, Abreu, I like a Brian Abreu. But he does walk a lot. He has command issues.
Him.
And Michael Fulmer walks more dudes than Brian Abreu. So that made me cross the list off Michael Fulmer. Another relief pitcher that you've been in favor of is David Robertson. And it's really the same line of the Fulmer that we just mentioned. He's older, 37 years old, which is fine in a rental. He's been good this year. Sub 2 ERA, sub 1 whip, which is outstanding. The whip is Montero-ish. He strikes out a little bit more than Montero, less than Abreu. But the reason that I am out on Robertson, some of the expected numbers don't think of him very favorably. And like Fulmer, he walks a ton. He walks more than Brian Abreu, which scares me off of David Robertson.
He's making $3.6 million. He's been on the biggest stage, closing for the Yankees and other big stages with the Yankees as well as other teams. I just think that it doesn't cost you a whole lot. The Cubs are just trying to unload him because we know that they're in the middle of a massive rebuild and they don't need an older veteran pitcher. And I think that he fits, again, because you don't need him to be your closer like he was with the Cubs. You need him to be better than and more experienced and better in big situations than the guys that are sitting, even if it's in the back of your bullpen. So if he's better than Abreu, if he's better than, you know, Belak or Taylor or whoever else you're throwing out there, or Seth Martinez, whoever. He's an upgrade. And so if you don't have to pay a whole lot to get him, I know there are teams that want him desperately, but I think that the Yankees, now that King went out for the year, are going to look to try and bring him back again. And again, like you said, you also want to play defensive and keep him away from the Yankees. But I think he makes your bullpen stronger and better no matter where you use him. And he doesn't have to be high leverage, but I think he helps you.
Can you live with a guy that walks more than Brian Abreu?
I think a lot of it has to do with who he's pitching for, too, in the situation that he's in. I think that I would feel more confident with him in big leverage situations than Brian Abreu.
I think it's more of a depth thing than like a total improvement. Like, is he better than Abreu? Yeah, I'm going to take him over Brian Abreu. I wouldn't put him ahead of Stanek, Montero, Neris, or Presley. So now he's like my fifth guy.
I wouldn't put him ahead of Presley or Stanek. I would put him in the conversation with Neris and Montero until they prove more to me.
Is it weird to you that Stanek pitches the sixth and Montero, Neris,
I would
seventh?
I would have thought Stanek would have been bumped up by now with the year he's had.
Stanek walks a lot, too, if we're being honest.
Well, you know how I always say, the first four pitches are going to dictate which Stanek you get. He just hasn't given up any runs.
Stanek walks more than Abreu, too. Like he just gets out of it. He's able to get out of those spots. The couple of bats now. Those are a couple of the arms that I don't want. These are names that it's not going to be popular, if I'm being honest with you. Andrew Benintendi. I do not want Andrew Benintendi. 28-year-old lefty. He's a good batting average guy, but he's basically Michael Brantley. Like, he's the exact same player as Michael Brantley this year. He's going to hit for some pretty good average. He's not going to slug. He's not going to hit any home runs. And if you believe what James Click is telling you, that Michael Brantley's injury is not long-term, you're trading for a player that you already have.
I don't need him. I don't need him. Don't want him. And I want to see bigger market teams fight over him, because maybe they deplete a little bit of what they have to give up on a guy like that so that they don't have enough to go back and get some of the guys that you're interested in too. But I just think, look, he's not a center fielder. Yes, he can play corner. Yes, he plays corner outfield, but I just don't think he does enough for me to move the needle. And like I said, you convinced me a while back that if you can get a guy with versatility, I love the versatility of a guy like a Bell because he's a switch hitter. Mm-hmm. I love the versatility of a Mancini because he can play corner outfield and first base and DH. I think those are more attractive to the Astros than a guy that just does what he does like Benintendi.
I'm scared of the defense, too, with Benintendi. Does he help you offensively if he's in left field, Brantley's in right, Tucker's in center field? Yes, he helps you offensively there. Are you gaining more runs than you're giving up, though? Because all of a sudden you go from being a good defensive outfield to a pretty poor defensive outfield.
Agree.
Benintendi's a pretty good left fielder, but what's the value of left field? It's like Quentin Nelson at left guard. Michael Brantley's not a good right fielder, and Kyle Tucker hasn't played there a lot, small sample size, but from what he has played there, it was not a great center fielder.
He's not a speed guy either in center field, which you need. And so, yeah, I would agree. The defense is going to take a hit. I think the offense could bump up, obviously, a bit. But is the payoff worth it? And then what you have to give up to get him? Because there's going to be competition for him? I'd say no.
Now, this team might have probably played their way into this guy not even being tradable, not even on the block, not even on the market. And I go to Baltimore. And I'm not against trading for a center fielder because I'm concerned about some things I've seen from Jake Myers. Cedric Mullins is somebody I don't want to trade for because of the price tag of what he would be in the season that he is having. Last year, he was fantastic, and I think the Orioles probably should have traded him at the end of the season because this year he's went backwards. 262 average, 708 OPS, not good. So, like, I don't know who he is. So, like, the fact that I don't know who he is, last year had a great year. It's the only year he's ever been good. So, like, that concerns me, and knowing that they're going to want a trade return for Cedric Mullins last year makes me worried that I'm losing in that trade because if Cedric Mullins isn't that guy, I'm betting on him returning to that guy, and he's not that. I'm losing that trade from the start.
The only thing that I would combat that with is I think that last year there was a market for Cedric Mullins and there were a lot of teams interested. You've barely heard his name mentioned this year, so maybe that is a bonus because he's not having a great year, that people have cooled on Cedric Mullins and maybe the price isn't that steep and maybe you can get him because they just want to get younger as they continue their rebuild yet again. And maybe him put into a lineup where there are better bats around him, he sees better pitches, he gets back to more of the form of a year ago.
And that ballpark's a pitcher's
park. And we've already said that with Mancini, that maybe he could excel more at Minute Maid. I don't know. I think he's talented. The price matters is the biggest thing to me. If it's at a reasonable price, it's something to kick the tires on.
Yep.
If it's astronomical or there's competition, I'm out.
See, that's where I think it would be astronomical, and I think that the reason that we haven't heard his name is because Mike Elias in Baltimore is not making
him. That's the other factor.
Like, he's still pretty young. He still has some years of club control. It looks like Baltimore's ahead of schedule with where they're at in their rebuild. I think that they're ultimately going to hang on to him anyway, so I feel like the price would be high. Orioles only three games out of the wild card as we talk right now. They have a lot of corner outfielders, though. It's why I still think Trey Mancini is going to be traded, but they don't have a lot of center fielders, why I don't think Cedric Mullins will be traded. Who are some names that you have heard that you want the Astros to be no part of ahead of the August 2nd trade deadline? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Klops is asking us why y'all dogging on Brian Abreu. I love Brian Abreu. Blankers wants to see a little bit more. Is that a fair way to put it?
I'm frustrated all the time. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm frustrated by Brian Abreu.
I saw somebody on Twitter yesterday. I forget who it was, and I forget exactly what they said, but it said something along the lines of, like, watching Brian Abreu pitch is like watching a toddler on a horse. Like, you're always scared of what could potentially happen. But Abreu pitched good yesterday. His numbers have been good this year. But Klops, a little behind the scenes, or I guess a little history. Blankers and I got into it pretty good about Brian Abreu. I like him. Blankers doesn't, I think, is a good way to summarize it.
The frustration is I love his arm and his talent and even his off-speed pitches. I hate the fact that it's all between his ears. It's self-inflicted, what the issues that he has. That bothers me.
Yeah, his command's not good. His command's not good. This year he's been able to pitch around it. He's got the most strikeouts per nine of any Houston Astro by a wide margin. I think he's actually going to be a name that teams want because I think he could be a closer in, like, Cincinnati. 713-780-ESPN. I don't want to trade Abreu for Robertson. 713-780-3776. All right, what is the greatest retro logo ever? Greatest retro logo ever. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So the Pistons, Detroit Pistons, of course, Brendan from Detroit. He missed his home, so he got a little nostalgia from the fine city of Detroit. Loves the Motown. But the Pistons yesterday are bringing back their 1996 through 2001 uniforms, which, if you don't remember, it was the teal uniforms. They had the horse with the fire as the main.
The horse head.
Yeah. The horse head with the fire as the main. I like the fire as the main. I love the Pistons' normal logo, to be honest, like the bad boy Pistons and the red, white, blue.
With just the red ball with the Detroit Pistons on it.
Like, and I get that this is just an alternative. It's just their classic edition.
But it is a throwback.
It's their throwback. They're, you know, it's going to be, they're not wearing it all the time. But return of the teal, I don't like when teams go away from their colors too much, to be honest with you.
If you're going to throwback, then throwback to the heyday era of the Pistons and go back to the ones that you're talking about.
Isn't the logo still the same, though?
No. Well,
it's a little, like, I thought the logo was still relatively the same.
Is it the
from when to when?
From now to when, like, they were the bad boy Pistons.
So they left.
It is a little different.
They left it, and they it's pretty similar now. It's not the same, but it's
similar. The
bad
boys was just the basketball logo with Detroit Pistons on it.
Yeah, which is what it is now, but it's just a different version of the same thing.
It's like the different font.
It is similar. It is very similar.
Why did they bring in the horse? I'm guessing horsepower?
Horsepower, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, horsepower. But like, that was in an era, all NBA logos were very different in that era. They were all super cartoony.
I think it's one of the worst logos in NBA history.
I do, too. I don't disagree with
I really do. I think it's terrible.
Along with the Grizzly, the Raptor, and the Pinstripe Rocket. With the eyes and teeth.
Jeremy said one of the worst in NBA history. I think what he means is what you're saying. That era in NBA history.
No, that era is the worst era in NBA history for logos.
Right, that's what you're saying. I disagree wholeheartedly.
I was involved in a lot of that back then when the league took over and decided that their creative and artistic people saw a vision that there needed to be bigger, bolder, all like lots of busyness going on. And they did the Raptors and the Rockets jerseys the same year, and I believe the Grizzlies. And it was just too much.
If I was going to rank my top 50 logos, which obviously would be boring as hell.
Top 50
but if
logos?
I was gonna, there's a reason I use that number. All 30 NBA logos from that time period would be on it.
Like the worst ever.
No, the best.
The best?
I think that era of
all three
NBA
of them would
logos,
be on it as a good?
All 30 NBA logos from that era would be on my top 50 list.
Man, I think they're the worst 50.
I agree.
Couldn't stand them. 6133. So what are the best retro logos ever? 6133 says the top two logos have to be the Raptor on the jerseys back during the Vince Carter era.
Well, that's the jersey we're talking about is terrible.
The big Barney.
Ferocious
Barney.
Yeah.
And he also says the Rainbow Nuggets jersey. The Rainbow Nuggets jersey was pretty deep, but that was a different era. That was before, if I remember correctly.
That was Michael Adams and
maybe like Abdul Rahim,
run and
too,
gun,
right?
Run and gun Nuggets.
Yeah.
Alex English, maybe.
Oh, even a little further back. Yeah, I like the Rainbow Nuggets ones. Those were pretty cool.
I think, here's where I get screwed, because I think the greatest logo of all times in terms of the creativity that a lot of people miss is the Brewers logo with the M and the B that's actually a baseball mitt with the ball. But since they went back to that as their primary logo, it's not retro anymore. Because otherwise, it was my favorite logo of all time, whether I was from Milwaukee or not. I just thought the creativity behind it was awesome.
Now it's just current.
Yeah.
713-780-ESPN. What are the best logos ever? 1944 took my second favorite logo ever, which was Pat the Patriot. Pat the Patriot was squatting down, about to snap the ball.
That was the Steve Grogan era Patriots when they got lambasted by the Bears in the Super Bowl. No, they got to the Super Bowl and the Bears beat them.
I remember them more like late 80s, early 90s when they were terrible.
Yeah, 85 Bears, that's who they crushed, and they had those uniforms. Mm-hmm. But I was a big Steve Grogan guy, too. I love those helmets. I didn't have the hatred of the Patriots back then like that.
They're bringing them back. They're going to be their alternate.
Are they?
Their alternate this year is going to be the Pat the Patriot logo.
Where are we on the Buccaneer with the creamsicle orange with the knife in its mouth?
People talked about that one. I can't stand that one.
I don't like it either.
It's weird.
The
it's
jersey
weird.
Color I get is different that people like it.
I think it's borderline racist, too.
The logo itself I don't like.
Like the color of the guy's skin. Like, I think it's borderline racist.
See, now you're taking it too far.
I'm just saying. I think it's borderline racist. It also looks like very Melrose Place to me.
I love
like,
the old,
kind of scandalous.
I love the old Astros logo with the balls going around the dome.
Oh,
flying around the dome with the Astros font. I love that logo.
My favorite retro Houston logo. I have two. The one I love more than any of them is the Oiler.
The old
Columbia blue oil Derek. That is my all time favorite logo. But my second one is the Houston Gambler logo. But I hate that they brought it back. I hate that the USFL took the Gamblers because I like it more for the nostalgia. Now that it's back, it's like, oh, you're a Gambler fan? No, I'm not a Gambler fan. No, it's the big G. It was the big, no, it was
the state of Texas in it.
It was the G, but the inside was shaped like the state of Texas, which I love logos that have subtle little hints like that.
That's why I like the MB so much.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things is whenever you have the subtle logo. See, a lot of people were saying the Brewers. I love the Brewers one, too.
Yep.
Like the MB, like that was really cool. The Denver Nuggets logo.
With the rainbow.
That was pretty cool.
I like the old Sonics logo where they had the skyline with the space needle and the basketball was the horizon that they had. I thought that was a cool logo for the Sonics.
Yeah.
With the green and yellow.
I used to love the court. Remember the court had the skyline?
Uh-huh.
I loved the skyline.
That's the same thing that was on the logo itself, yeah.
The skyline on the floor was like the first arena that I've ever seen do that, and I absolutely loved it.
What about the old Padres with the Padre that almost looks like Little Caesar's Pizza, but he's extending the baseball bat out? That was cool.
I think that was from their Friar era.
Yes.
From the Friar era.
Way back when they first started, yeah.
Yeah, they were the Friars at some point.
That was a cool one.
There's one list here that says the Milwaukee Buck logo.
I love that logo too. The old Bango logo with the mascot when the Bango deer was actually somewhat likable. Yeah, I like that one.
It looks so cartoony.
A little bit, but that was an era for that too.
The Baltimore Oriole, the old Baltimore Oriole was really good.
Yeah.
They used to have that on the hats. The old Spurs logo says 1903.
Is there one? I thought it's always been the same one. It's just a spur.
I think there is a throwback Spur logo.
Oh, the Fiesta Spurs. When the Rockets beat them in 95, that's the one where there was a spur, but it was like the Fiesta colors, the orange and turquoise.
It looked like a Taco Cabana.
If you want to go that route.
I did. Like the same logos were on that Spurs logo.
So the Buccaneers logo's racist, but calling it a Taco Cabana-esque logo?
Whenever the same colors are in the Taco Cabana logo and the same colors are in the San Antonio Spurs logo, that's not racist at all. Saying that two logos have the same colors is not racist.
The fact that you just brought that up, I forgot how bad that background looked behind the word Spurs.
Well, I need to find a throwback Taco Cabana.
No, I know you're right. I remember the color.
But I want to see how close it is because I feel like it's almost
identical. They were a sponsor of the Spurs back then.
Look at that. Look at the colors on that Taco Cabana logo. They're same exact colors as the throwback Spurs.
Is there turquoise in there?
Yeah. Well, there might not be turquoise. Yeah, there's a little bit of turquoise right there at the bottom.
All right.
Yeah.
Just know it was an all-time bad logo. The Charlotte Bobcats.
Oh,
that was bad. That was really bad. That's a good call.
Somebody said the Supersonic 6602.
The Hawks, when they went to that like widespread, like really elaborate kind of real looking hawk was just annoying to me, and it was too busy. I thought that was terrible.
Montreal Expo logo.
Everybody thought it was ELB for some reason.
The Expo logo?
Yeah. It's just a big M with three colors.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember exactly what it looked like now that I think about it. Somebody said the magic blue pinstripe jerseys. That's not exactly a logo, but the blue pinstripe jerseys, I mean, Rocket fans remember that. Yep. They swept Orlando.
They whooped their ass.
Wearing the blue pinstripe
Shaq
jerseys.
Shaq and Penny, yeah.
I kind of like those jerseys, the magic jerseys.
I think the Heat really has never changed their logo. I think the Heat have a cool logo.
The Heat?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
The flame in basketball?
Leg says the Seattle Kraken with the anchor and the space needle is the best design ever.
That's too much.
Legs. It's not retro.
It isn't.
I haven't really seen the Seattle Kraken logo. I don't really pay attention a whole lot to the hockey. It's just an S.
Oh, there's another one. I think their secondary logo is an actual Kraken.
They also said that there's an anchor and the space needle in it. Mm. So I guess it's very busy with a lot of the Seattle ties to it. How about the old A's logo with the elephant and the baseball? I think it was the elephant standing on the baseball.
That was pretty
cool.
Everybody always you have to get the story to figure out what the hell and how what's that athletic about an A? About an elephant.
What is the story there? I don't even know the story.
Charlie Finley, and there was something to do with, I don't know, what the elephant being good luck pointed a certain direction and all this other stuff. There's a story behind it, but yeah, it's very, very weird. Yeah. I like the old Cincinnati Red guy, the red leg guy with the handlebar mustache
and the
baseball.
Yeah.
That was a cool one.
When the A's move to Vegas, hopefully that happens, talking into existence, do you want them to keep the color schemes?
I'm really not a fan, but
I kind of like the color scheme. It was like the white shoe. Like, I think it's pretty cool.
Tony Kemp was wearing the bright yellow shoes yesterday.
Was he?
Yeah, with the yellow socks.
Oakland A's should wear white cleats always.
They used to that used to be back in the day. That's all they wore.
8788, Cole 45 logo needs to come back more, but probably offensive.
Yeah, pretty much not going to get that one through.
I have a 45. Now, it's not the old revolver, but I have it was the second
just
logo.
Just says .45S.
Because the first one, the Cole 45s, I think the first logo was the revolver.
And then on the hat, though, it was the...
just the 4.5S.
The 4.5S.
Yeah. I was a, I have a shirt, the 45 shirt. I like that hat, too. But don't wear the hat. What are your favorite all-time logos? 713-780-ESPN. Cardinal Powder Blue, says Dre on the Twitch.
It's not really a logo. It's a uniform. They've had the same logo forever, too.
Yeah, not our logo. It's more jersey there. Yeah. Astros Dome logo is the GOAT, which is the one that you brought up, too. Yep. Old U of H logo was great, too, says some people on the Twitch. I like which the one? Interlocking U of H, the skinny U of H.
Oh, yeah, the skinny cougar.
Yeah, I was a fan of that one. 713-780-ESPN. 713.
Was that during Fi Slammajama?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit towards Fi Slammajama, and then also the Andre Ware was the skinny U of H. 713-780-ESPN. What's the best month on the calendar? And we'll ask the Wheelhouseman. It's going to be interesting to see which one we get because it could change the answer. Let yourself dream. What is the best that Davis Mills can be? It's the Killer
Bee. By the
way,
how do we not say the old Georgia Tech logo? That damn Killer Bee is awesome.
I wore that on Monday. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Get Yordan Alvarez protection. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Jake Asman of the Wheelhouse is hanging out with us. We were just talking about all-time great sports logos. Brendan's really happy that they're bringing back the Pistons retro piston with the till. He thinks that era of logos is the best era ever in logos. But he liked the he likes them. He likes them. So what's the best retro sports logo ever?
How about the Raiders? I mean, they haven't changed it, but
does that count?
Yeah, I don't know. if they haven't changed it, doesn't count. Like the Yankees or the Packers or the Cardinals.
I do like the logo, but I'm just wondering if we can cherry pick here and say
we gotta
is it
be
retro?
Missing a couple.
All right, the San Diego Chargers Thunderbolt.
Oh, that's a good one.
See?
Yeah.
It's a little different now that they're in L.A.
Yeah. Okay. I like where you're at there. I like what you got going on. We were also talking about earlier in the show, what is the best month on the calendar?
Ooh, this is a very good question. From a sports perspective, I'll start there because this is a sports radio station.
And you're a sports guy. Mm-hmm. Like, sports come into your life.
I'm a sportsman. That is correct.
Sportsman.
I'm also a wheelhouseman, as you like to say. I would probably say October, right? As someone who's a fan of all four major sports, you got every sport in action. You got the playoffs for baseball. You got NBA and hockey starting that month. If you're a football fan, you're getting right into the mix of the NFL season. I would say October would be the best sports month if I can only pick one.
Yeah, see, I think
I'm on board with that.
Ultimately, I think we all decided as a show October was the way to go. The weather's cooler, which I think is very important if we're talking in this city, right? Like July, August, you're looking at 100 degrees every single day. How much do you really enjoy that? Sports are all very much part of our lives. You're talking about football. You're talking about playoff baseball. Basketball is getting started. College football is going on. Halloween, if you're a trick-or-treater or you have kids to trick-or-treat, can always be very nice. March was very difficult for me to, that's second for me. And March would be the closest one I could have to October. Obviously, I love March Madness. March Madness is my favorite event out there. That's one of my favorite things of the year. Yeah, go Cougs. I mean, it's made it even better. It's magnified it, and it was already my all-time favorite. It's also the start of, spring training, so, Hope Springs Eternal, right? Like, everybody's getting going. But there is no football there, so that makes it tough.
How about November? Because you got the mix of a great holiday with Thanksgiving that's built around family and football, which I love. You got, obviously, the NFL being in full swing with college football as well, kind of like the back end of the college football regular season there. Baseball's done, but you still got some basketball and hockey in that month. College hoops is in swing then. So I would say November's a sneaky.
What about Marple?
Month. So is that the end
that's
of
the
March
last 2 weeks
April?
In March and the first 2 weeks of April? You get the Masters in there and start of baseball and end of it, Final Four?
I didn't know we could do that, but if that's
I didn't
allowed,
either, but
throw
I,
it in.
I created it today. I created my own month.
I'm a fan. See, how about the end of October into November? Because then you still get the playoff baseball, you still get football, you get the start of all these other sports.
It's a good one, too. Okay. So we're creating sub-months. That's what we're doing here.
Just recreating the calendar that's only been in existence since the day of time. Really good idea.
This is the new dawn where everybody recreates everything. So this is what we're doing.
Oh, yeah. We were talking earlier because I have a bit of an issue with Davis Mills truthers and the Davis Mills mafia. Because, look, I think Davis Mills has earned the right to start this year. I'm not suggesting that he should not be the starter in 2022. No one would suggest that. It's not realistic. It's not the right thing to do with where this organization is at. My fear is what Davis Mills is going to be long term. But my real angst in where it relates to this conversation is all the pro-Millsers, the hashtag Mills Mafia, all of those people, the Mills truthers, they'll attack opinions that don't portray Davis Mills in a positive light. I challenge those people to define what Davis Mills can become. All right, what is his upside potential? Because like Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, we look at all these quarterbacks and we say, well, he could be top 10 someday. So what can Davis Mills be? I asked this to Blankers. I said, in your wildest imagination, what is the most you're willing to go with the highest top-end potential that Davis Mills can someday be at some point in his career? And he said Derek Carr.
I said 12, like a top 12
quarterback. Top 12-ish quarterback. Where do you think that in your wildest imaginations, which I don't know how far you're willing to go with those wildest imaginations, would you go for Davis Mills' this high-end, top-end potential?
I love this question. Because it's tough. My hunch is long neck Kirk Cousins. Like, I think he's Kirk Cousins at his very best. And I don't think that's unfair to say that. Like, I don't see top 10 with Davis Mills. If Davis Mills ends up being a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, holy crap, did Nick Caserio know what he was doing? And he deserves all the praise. I think he could be a solid NFL quarterback. You know, The Athletic did that story where they polled all the GMs and coaches and put the quarterbacks in tiers. And one of the anonymous people said, oh, Davis Mills, he's a three. He's a tier three guy. Well, the best of tier three, 15th, was Kirk Cousins. So I see at Davis Mills' best, him being like a league average, slightly above average quarterback.
I think that's where, like, I think most people would say that. I think even Davis Mills truthers would say that, which is kind of ironic because you have people saying, well, Davis Mills isn't going to be great. And then you have people say, oh, you people don't know what you're talking about. And I think if you find a common ground, it's probably in that range, like the teens, high-end potential. The article that you're referring to, saying Kirk Cousins, Blankers saying David Carr's brother, Derek. There was other people in the article saying, like, Andy Dalton, but slightly better, right? Like, my point with that is, terrific. Fantastic. Like, that is awesome. Is it great return on investment for a third-round quarterback? I would say yes. But relative to where you need to be in the NFL and where you want to reside in the NFL, I don't believe that's good enough. I don't believe that's what you need to have to be a long-term winner in the NFL. So even high-end potential for Davis Mills, the most that we're willing to go in our wildest of dreams, congratulations, you have a dude that you're not going to be a perennial playoff team in the NFL.
I think that's fair. I guess the thing to keep in mind, if he ends up only being at the Cousins level, well then, if you have the rest of the team built up, maybe you're the Browns from this offseason training for Deshaun Watson to upgrade at that position, or you're the Broncos who had the team in place but didn't have the quarterback, so they made the move for Russell Wilson, or the Rams who made the move for Stafford, or Brady who signed with the Bucks. So, like, if Davis Mills is Kirk Cousins, okay, great. You got us to where we need to be, and now we need to find that quarterback that can get us over the hump. But this team has been bad for as long as they've been, and this is such a long rebuild that if he's Kirk Cousins, within a couple of years, you sign for that, and then you kind of figure out the rest of your long-term plans.
See, I think you learn
from
your mistakes, too, right? Because we were talking about it. You look back and say, Matt Schaub was better than they had seen in the past, so he was good and he was loved, and then he fell off. But in retrospect, when you look back on it, at a certain point, why didn't they cut bait and get better while they still had the roster? Now you learn from that and say just what you said. See how far you can go with Davis Mills. At a certain point, whether you figure it out on your own or there's just too much data and competition where you lose games that you say, hey, you've been great, but it's time for us to move on and for you to move on, and we part ways.
Yeah, they're so far behind in this rebuild because of the situation Caserio inherited with no cap space, no first or second round pick. So, like, last year was year zero. This is truly year one. You see what you have in Mills, and if you need to move on, you move on. But at least you give them a chance, and that's, like, the smart way to go about rebuilding your team.
Yeah, and I mean, I also believe that there is a plausible scenario that exists where Davis Mills does prove us all wrong. Like, I'm not willing to just like, say that's never going to happen, or the possibility does not exist. Disqualify that as a scenario that could take place. People out, you know, overexceed their expectations all the time. Like, I don't want to compare Davis Mills to Tom Brady, but Tom Brady is an example. No one expected this six-round quarterback out of Michigan to become the quarterback with the greatest resume in NFL history. That's obviously the most extreme, egregious you know, player exceeding their expectations. But Davis Mills could go out, like, he exceeded his expectations in 2021. There is nobody in this world that thought we would be discussing is Davis Mills a top 20-ish quarterback going into his second season. So he's already exceeded expectations once. If he can do it again, then we're having a different conversation in a year. I just don't see that playing out. Could it happen? Sure. I just don't see it.
I just said to the Mills truthers, tell me why you see us missing it and what are we missing that you see that could make him better than what we've said.
Like, fans just need something to kind of latch on to, right? This Texans team has taken some beating from a PR standpoint the last couple of years. They've lost games. They had the embarrassing David Culley situation. They nearly hired Josh McCown as their head coach. So I think there are just fans that want to be optimistic, saw Mills play well the last five games of the year, just hoping maybe they got their guy that no one saw coming.
See, it kind of rubs me the wrong way, too, whenever I hear he played well in the last five games. I feel like he played well in a couple of them, not all of them.
I think that's fair, too.
Yeah. I mean,
sometimes the opponent plays bad, too.
Yeah, like you can look at the Chargers game. I mean, he played really well. Did the opponent play bad? Sure. But you have to give him credit for playing well in the Chargers game. Played really well. Did he play well in the San Francisco game? No. Did he play well in the first half of the Titan game? No. So you're right. It is some cherry-picking numbers that are going on when it comes to Davis Mills. And again, I hope that Davis Mills proves me wrong. If I was to answer your question, to play devil's advocate here, to play Mills advocate for just a second, like, what are the attributes that Mills can show you that would make him a top 15, 12, 10 quarterback, whatever? That number is now arbitrary. To me, it's like being a student of the game. It's the opposite of Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is the most athletic quarterback in the NFL. How many quarterbacks in the NFL were drafted number one in the NFL and top 10 in Major League Baseball? None of them. Just one, Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray is the most athletic specimen playing the quarterback position in the world. Why did Arizona throw the caveat of you need to study 4 hours during the week? Because he doesn't do that. But I think that is the single most attribute for a quarterback that takes you to the next level. Was Tom Brady, did he always have the biggest arm? No. Was Tom Brady the most athletic? Absolutely not. Same thing with Peyton Manning. What made those guys so cerebral? They knew where to go with the ball before, really, the ball was ever snapped. They knew how to read defenses. They knew how to get the mismatched. They knew where to go with the ball at all times. If Davis Mills is going to prove us wrong and be that guy, he's not going to do it with a rocket arm. He's not going to do it with athleticism.
It's the intangibles.
It has to be that.
It's the intangibles. And he comes from Stanford, and everybody already talks about the study habits and the way that he goes about, like you said, the cerebral aspects of studying film and going over the playbook and knowing his progressions and knowing, you know, his options in the huddle and how to control the huddle. Those are all great. At a certain point, though, you still got to deliver the football in a small window on third down when you need a first down. You got to do some things to show you can move the ball up and down the field.
Yeah, completely agree. If he ends up being a top 15 quarterback, it's not going to be because he's using his legs or he's got this Josh Allen-like arm. He's going to have to beat teams because he's really smart and he can make all the throws, but he's not going to be a guy that's going to win because he's mobile. He's going to win within the pocket.
Yeah, and I don't think that he doesn't need to be Kyler Murray to be a top 10 quarterback and prove us wrong. It has to be the mold of a Brady, the mold of Stafford, I think, has a bigger arm than Davis Mills, but Stafford's not Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson with the ability to scramble. He's decent at it. He can keep a play alive. Davis Mills has to be more of that mold to prove us all wrong.
But as I said, too, it depends on what's around him, too, right? You can only be so much as a quarterback if you don't have the resources around you to do what you need to do line-wise, you know, skill position-wise. And it looks like they're on the road to doing those things and giving them those things, but they have to continue to do those things.
He might
not
get that much time, though, right? Like, he might only get this year. And if you look at this team right now, outside of Brandon Cooks, is there a single skill position player you're confident in?
Yeah. What's coming up in the wheelhouse today?
A great show. We're going to talk plenty about the Astros, some trade deadline rumors that are out there.
305, first pitch.
That's what I keep hearing.
It's now 7:05. Rain delay. There's weather in Oakland.
I mean, unbelievable how that works, right? We'll talk plenty of MLB trade deadline, mixing some NFL conversation. We got Brooks Cabina joining us to kind of do a Texans training camp primer ahead of Cody and Brooks taking the field Friday to watch guys in pads do their thing.
What is Cody going to be wearing at training camp on Friday?
You know, it's funny. I heard some rumors of Cody potentially doing some video content from training camp for the station website and sports map. So I'm expecting, like, the full get-up, the bucket hat on, the notepad in hand.
Sure.
It's going to be incredible.
The General Junior. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.